Har du et enkeltpersonforetak eller en liten bedrift? Da du sikkert lei av å høre meg snakke om hvor enkelt det med kvitteringer og bilag i fiken. Så vi gir oss her, fordi vi liker enkelt. Fiken. Superenkelt regnskap.
Da jeg tok mesterbrev, så var det 7 bunadtilvirkermestere i hele verden, faktisk. Du skal bruke en mester, fordi da det det nærmeste du kommer en forsikring mot både svart arbeid og dårlig arbeid.
Finn din mester blant 70 håndverksfag på mesterbrev.no. Da du i trygge hender.
Denne uken det Crazy Week hos Domino's Pizza. Det betyr halv pris på all pizza til og med søndag. Pepperoni, skinke, kylling eller ostepizza. Alle favorittene til halv pris. Bestill på Domino's.no eller i appen.
Velkommen til Ukrainepodden, en podcast fra Nettavisen. Jeg heter Tormod Malvin Sæther og journalist og programleder. Og i dagens episode så skal dere få høre et intervju som Jørn og jeg gjorde med Alexander Kamyshin da vi var i Ukraina tidligere i februar. Kamyshin, han minister for strategiske industrier i Ukraina. Det det vi på norsk antagelig selv ville kalt forsvarsindustrien. Så han har da ansvaret for å bygge opp og videreutvikle den, slik at Ukraina kan lage sine egne våpen og bli mindre avhengig av vestlig støtte. Og så tenkte jeg dere kan få litt bakgrunnsinfo da, om hvem denne Kamyshin er. Han blir sett på en slags ukrainsk politisk wonderboy, som veldig effektiv leder, har han rykte på seg for å være. Da den fullskala invasjonen startet i 2022, så var han sjef for den ukrainske jernbanen, og fikk det til på en veldig, veldig bra måte. Det var under hans ledelse at hundretusenvis, kanskje millioner av ukrainere ble fraktet i trygghet fra krigen, enten på en måte til andre steder i Ukraina eller ut av landet til Polen og videre vestover i Europa. For det ikke mulig å fly i Ukraina på grunn av faren for å bli skutt ned. Og jernbanenettet altså helt avgjørende for at Ukraina skal få de vestlige våpensystemene de får via gjerne Polen og Romania, de blir fraktet til, og så fraktes de da på tog videre derfra, og frem til frontlinjen. Så jernbanen i Ukraina på en måte kallet blodårene til det ukrainske forsvarskampen. Det kanskje litt klisjéfylt å kalle det, men det i hvert fall en helt avgjørende faktor. Så etter cirka et år inn i den fullskala invasjonen, så ble han hentet fra det ukrainske jernbaneselskapet til den ministerposten han har nå. Og han har også fått ansvaret for å fikse alle bomberommene i Kyiv, for det var en ganske stor skandale i Ukraina i fjor, hvor det kom frem at mange av bomberommene, til tross for over et år med krig, enten ikke fungerte på en måte, eller i hvert fall at de var sperret eller fylt opp med andre ting. Da. Det jo noe vi også har sett eksempler på fra andre land, at bomberom fylles med, som brukes som et lager, da, som kanskje lagrer, jeg vet ikke om man kan lagre det, men man kan lagre kjøretøy eller andre ting som staten eller kommunen har som de må lagre et eller annet sted, så setter man bare inn på et bomberom. Og da var det på en måte Kamyshin sitt ansvar å få på plass alle disse bomberommene i Kyiv og sørge for at de var oppdatert. Det ble sett på som en nærmest umulig oppgave, men så vidt jeg vet så fikk han det til det også. Så nå, den store utfordringen for Kamyshin er nå å få forsvarsindustrien til Ukraina opp og gå. Og hvordan han skal gjøre det, det får du høre nå.
What's your main goal with your job, like the strategic industries? What's the most important task that you have to?
When the war began, we've been fighting with Soviet weapon we had at the beginning of the war. Then Western countries came with military aid. And the first year of this war, we've been producing not much. At the end of the first year, my president sent me to run defense industry, and that's where defense industry became important. Since then, we grew production significantly, and already now we can produce significantly more than we can fund, unfortunately. So at this point, we are fighting to fund the local defense industry capabilities. And it's not only in conventional weapon and ammunition, it's something new that happened mainly last year, like defense tech. That's unmanned systems that fly, go on the ground, go on the water and underwater. And that's something that happened in Ukraine, and that's something that grows significantly, and something that the whole world would be learning from us, and something that we will export after we finish this war with the victory, because again, it's something new. That's the new war. And we've showed that with naval drones, Mosquito fleet, we can make Russian fleet out. We showed that with unmanned flying systems, we can reach any point in Russia from St. Petersburg to Tuapse. So it works, and we are focusing on defense tech because that's making the change. That's the game changer.
Yeah, and I think the former Minister of Defense, Mr. Resnikov, I think he had like a presentation of different new, for example, naval drones last year around May, April, and then he promised the Russians a surprise. And a couple of weeks later, it was a big explosion on the Kerch Bridge. How could you tell me more about how you operate to do those kind of operations?
That's the new experience we have, and we learn fast. And again, if you look back for 2023, you will see that that was the year when naval drones fleet made Russians out of Crimea, and soon we'll make them out from the point they try to hide now.
And I just read an interview with you from last week, or some quotes that you said that during next year you will be able to start the production of 155mm artillery shells in Ukraine. Could you tell me about the process to get there? Because as I understand it, it's quite complicated.
It's complicated. That's actually the crucial point where we still need Western technologies, because that's licensed production that comes from Western countries, including Norway. And that's where we need assistance. All the rest, probably, we are already doing ourselves pretty well. And in 155, we still need joint production, because that's the best way how we can get together to increase in the capabilities. And it's not only we who need the increase in capabilities, it's the whole Europe, it's the whole free world that needs ramping up the production. You know, Europe is not growing that fast, US is growing as well, but we, all of us, need much more.
Do you think the European politicians and people in Europe has understood how dire the situation is for the whole kind of world order? Or like, is it, do you think, does the Europeans still live in like a deep peace?
I'm sure that Europeans, all the free people of the free world, already understand that democracies should be armed better than tyrannies. The defense industry is important again. We should get back to understanding that defense industry is crucial.
Yeah.
I would just like to congratulate you. It's extremely impressive that you have gone from being a country without a navy to create a new kind of naval force. And as you said, when this is over, you'll be the world leader on naval drones. So you'll go from having no navy to defeat the Black Sea fleet, and then being the leader of the new way of fighting naval warfare. But we've seen reports that you create new generations of these naval warfare drones all the time. Are there... should the Russians expect new surprises and be attacked new places?
You should always expect new surprises when you come to a free country of free people, creative people with smart minds, engineers. We call them iron people.
Mm.
So if you come with slaves to a free country, you should always be expecting surprises.
How important is this ability of innovation and living in a free country where people are able to create new technologies as this in this sort of massive struggle between US, you're a big country, but Russia is a much bigger country.
Again, what we see now, it's the beginning of the new war strategy. No one will imagine having a war, waging a war now without drones. And it becomes a game changer. And that's what we learned fast, and that's what we learn on, because that's a constant learning process. Again, no one seen things like FPV drones before. And this year we'll make over 1 million of them. And that's what is becoming not just something like additional, but it's becoming the major part of the game.
Yeah.
And we got other things working in the working mode, and that will come
but
to the front line soon.
How soon can I say?
But like we established the culture of making new things, so now like I'm seeing the schedule of new things coming on, of the tests, field tests, battlefield tests, and that's something that I really like when there are many things you test daily. So it's a culture of being creative and being and working on new things, innovations.
That's brilliant. But even though there's a lot of new technologies and new ways of fighting coming, you still need the sort of classical things like tanks. And I read that it was your ambition to restart production of the T-84 Oplot.
No.
Okay. That's not happening.
It's a mistake.
Okay.
I never said that. Because okay. In armored vehicles, generally, we are producing now, we can produce more than we can fund.
Okay.
But again, if you would ask people on the front line, they would tell you that they need more drones, not tanks.
Okay.
Any tank that goes out now, that would be hit by FPV.
Last week,
so there is a gray zone where it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Last week, your deputy defense minister was in Norway to talk with the defense industry there, and he said to me that you're wanting Norwegian companies to come to Ukraine and start producing defense capabilities here. Could you tell me why that's important for you?
That's important not only for us, but for other countries' defense industry, because when you start working on the ground in Ukraine, you are benefiting from a shorter innovation cycle, from making things and modernizing them faster.
And how was the trip to Norway? You know, was it were you happy after it? Like, did you make some progress?
It was a successful trip. I heard he brought the idea to Norwegian defense industry, and I'm sure that we will do more together.
Yeah, and also I think after the war, Ukraine will have a huge defense industry that will still be there. And could you tell me, like, do you have any plans for how you will use that after war? Like, I guess it would be an important part of building up your economy and the country again.
Definitely. And I would believe it would be fair if we would share back those things that we learned how to produce here that works with other countries, building up joint capabilities, joint defense capabilities. And I'm sure the defense industry would be the key, the largest and the main strategic export product for Ukraine.
Yeah.
We've been building ourselves as agricultural country, as the breadbasket for Europe for decades. And we were quite good in that. we got efficient agriculture, we got efficient agricultural logistics, and every Ukrainian would have a friend who was doing farming. I was doing myself. Now you would have a Ukrainian, a friend who would be doing defense tech, defense industry. And now we are building ourselves as the arsenal of the free world, because again, we have to be armed good enough to let Russians go out of my country.
And I guess there will be a lot of customers for that industry as well, because we see that there's a lot of countries around the world that has stopped or canceled orders of Russian weapons because they see that the Russian weapons doesn't work very well in this war. And maybe they will change their supplier and order weapons from you afterwards.
We would be happy to work together with Western countries on taking over Russian share of defense industry exports globally. And I'm sure that our joint products would be a good substitute.
Yeah. And you pushed the Russians very far back in the Black Sea. Do you think they will still be present in a year?
In
a year, like how do you see the development for the next year? Like you push them really far back and you put
them. It's not the end.
Excuse me?
We're working on that. Still working on that.
It's coming.
It's not the finish yet.
Yeah, so we'll see more action in the Black Sea in the coming time. Yeah. And is there any place in the Black Sea that will be safe for Russia the next year?
Yeah.
The bottom. okay.
So yeah, that's a fair answer.
That's the fair place for them.
Yeah. I think, do you have any
let's say, and this is just a theory, that in the future there will be no Russian Black Sea fleet, will other parts of their fleet, like the Baltic fleet or the Northern fleet or the Pacific fleet, will any of them be under threat from you?
I don't comment it. It's not my domain.
That's okay. A fair question. But this has become kind of the army of the drones, and the drones are really crucial in this war, both in, as you said, in the sea and air. But what's the next step? Like, what's the next big thing you think in the drone war? Do you have any ideas?
This year would be a year of challenge how to use it.
Yeah.
Now we can produce enough. So that would be the year of efficient usage of that.
Because today we met a drone company here in Kyiv that had like a lock and load system that the drone could lock on a vehicle driving like 60 kilometers an hour and hit it. And that's, I think, like developments like that is...
Yeah. So again, the point would be in efficient usage of those systems.
Yeah.
Det ble en ganske brå avslutning da på intervjuet, da telefonen til Kamyshin ringte. Han en travel mann og måtte haste videre i neste møte. Men vi håper at dere synes det her var interessant, og Jørn og jeg vi tilbake neste uke med helt ferske episoder og rapporter fra frontlinjen i Ukraina. Takk for at du lyttet. Husk å følge oss på den plattformen du lytter til podcast på. Anbefale oss gjerne til en venn, og hvis du lytter til på oss på for eksempel på Spotify, så legg gjerne igjen en tilbakemelding nå på slutten av episoden, så hvis du har et eller annet du vil si til oss, eller send oss en mail på ukrainapodden@nettavisen.no.